Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today joined by Dave Prentice, Chris Beasley, and Gav Buckland. As again, we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park this week. And just before we sat down to record, Everton confirmed that they had reached a pre-contract agreement with Jonas Lossell to sign on a three-year deal from July the 1st. So we'll be discussing our favourite free transfers in Everton history, and also what this means, what Lossell's arrival will mean for Martin Stekelenburg, who perhaps increasingly looks like the odd man out. And we'll also discuss the what seems like the impending departure of Marco Silva's number two, João Pedro Sousa, and whether or not enough has been made of Marco losing his trusted number two of many, many years. Preno, you look the most confident, so I'm going to ask you first. Who's your favourite free transfer in Blues history?
It's a very, very difficult one to answer, because most of the favourite signings you can think of, they've always been like nominal fees attached.
Yeah,
I think Paul Power was like, you know, magnificent signing, but I think he cost like 50 grand or something. Nigel Martin was another, I think there was a nominal fee attached. Andy King, 35 grand. Obviously, the most recent, Seamus Coleman, 60 grand. There's always a small figure attached. So to be a completely, you know, sort of free transfer, there's probably one in the 70s or 80s that I've bound to have forgotten. So I'm going to go right up to date, and Gareth Barry, who I just thought was such an inspired deal at the time. And it's one of those that flew under the radar, that people like shrugged and went, oh, really? You know, so a guy that's like, you know, way past his peak, he's got no pace, you know, so do we really need him? And I think it was only like a couple of months in when you suddenly thought, wow, this player is a proper midfield general, you know, so holds things together. He's consistent, very rarely injured. You can argue that lacked a little bit of discipline at times, but he was the cleverest man in the world at just picking up that tactical booking when necessary and not getting sent off. I think he had that mad record of having more bookings in, you know, it's a history without red cards,
which
so it takes some doing that. So, you know, whilst I try and scour the memory banks and think of one from the 70s or 80s that cost absolutely nothing, Gareth Barry, I think, you know, is one that doesn't get enough credit. And, you know, possibly you could argue that we sold him earlier than we should have done. Ronald Koeman admitted that you wanted to give him first-team football, couldn't guarantee him first-team football, which is why you allowed him to move on. And I think, you know, so he continued to show that he could still perform, you know, sort of Premier League level even then. So short-lived, and, you know, so only a couple of years of his Everton career, but he cost nothing. So I would argue Gareth Barry. And while one of you three are, you know, sort of discussing the next one, I'll try and scour the internet.
Well, interestingly, Gareth is a free agent this summer.
Really? Yeah. I think his usefulness has now probably been outlived. And no, I certainly wouldn't advocate bringing him back. But for the time that he was at Goodison Park, yeah, he was a proper Everton player. And we were banging the drum for him to be recalled to the England squad. And he was laughing about it, saying that because I scored a long-range goal against, was it Norwich?
Yeah.
You know, so suddenly, you know, so I'm being touted for England again. But no, it's consistency levels and his performance levels, you know, so were excellent. And if Jonas Lossell has anything like the influence on the club that Gareth Barry did, that'll be a great free transfer.
Bees, spotlight's on you.
I'm glad I'm going next now, because Gav, I get one more to choose from. I was going to say, like Dave was mentioning, you probably struggled to get one from the 70s and 80s, because it's only since the Bosman ruling came through
that
Everton would tend to bring in free transfers. I mean, otherwise it'd be more the domain of the lower division clubs. So I'm going to go for Stephen Naismith.
Good shout.
It's different circumstances, because it wasn't so much a usual end of contract, but the Rangers collapsing as a club, the meltdown, and there was a bit of a hoo-ha over that, whether Everton would end up paying a fee, but they didn't. They got him on a free transfer. His first season looked like a game trier, but Nothing special under David Moyes, his fellow Scot who brought him, and perhaps out on the wing a lot of the time, wasn't as effective as he could have been, but really blossomed under Roberto Martinez, often an impact player. I mean, that amazing day when he came off the bench against Chelsea, scored a perfect hat-trick after coming on as a substitute.
And let people forget he was actually, as you say, he was on the bench.
Yeah, early, was it to Besic, I think, an early injury. He came on. He was a great player, great guy around the club, off the pitch as well, really well-liked. And Everton actually did well in the end because they signed him on a free transfer. And I think they sold him for 8.5 million to Norwich City, and he didn't really do much there. And obviously, he's been on loan.
Scored against Liverpool on his debut.
Yeah, I think he sort of peaked too early then, and then he went quickly downhill. So Everton definitely got the best years out of him, and he was a really effective piece of business for the club.
And of course, Prenos, I'm sure you're about to enlighten us. We're still getting stuff from Stephen Naismith.
Oh, I was going to relate a different anecdote. And Bob, if people are listening, they've got young children in the room. There might be a little bit of colourful language coming up. So put their hands over their ears very quickly. But no, Everton are still getting money for him. I think Bill Kenwright negotiated the deal with Norwich that if they ever got promoted, Everton would get a further £1 million. So 3.5 years after he last kicked the ball for the club, Everton pocketed another £1 million.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Which is quite a shrewd deal. But no, the anecdote I loved was he was not particularly highly thought of when he signed, if you recall, Stephen Naismith. You know, so people just were a little bit underwhelmed by his signing. And he got a bit of flack from the crowd. And I remember, was it Liverpool he scored his first goal against, in a derby match. And his wife used to come and sit in the main stand. And, you know, you can imagine, you know, no one knew who she was. So she's having to sit there and hear all this abuse being, you know, sort of hurled at her husband, who's like, so, you know, pulling his tripe out there on the pitch. Mm. And it might have been the Chelsea game, where, you know, he'd scored his third, and this guy apparently had been sat behind her, who'd been just giving him dog's abuse throughout his entire Everton career, and she couldn't help herself. She just turned around and goes, "Oh, he's not so shit anymore, is he?" And you know, you can imagine, you know, so friends and family of footballers who are having to sit in the stand and listen to all this, and you can't do anything, can you? Otherwise, you'd end up in fights every game.
Yeah.
But you know, she just couldn't help herself. I just thought that was great. You know,
certainly in that second half of Martinez's first season, he was terrific, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the two observations I'd say about Naismith is the first being when he scored for Everton, he scored in big games, didn't he?
Yeah.
You have a look.
His records.
He scored against Liverpool. He is. And I sadly worked this out. Well, when he left Everton, there was only one player who was in entire Europe who scored more league goals against teams managed by Jose Mourinho than Stephen Naismith.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. What's the player? So he scored against Chelsea home and away. He scored at Stamford Bridge, didn't he?
Yeah. He scored and scored, obviously, the hat-trick, scored five. Fella called Xavi Prieto, who plays for Real Sociedad, I think, in Spain. So forget about Messi, Ronaldo, and all that.
Gav,
stuff
I
like,
bow to your nerdery.
I sadly worked out that there was only Xavi Prieto. This is the time. I think somebody like Aguero's got probably off the corner. But there's not even that. There was miles ahead.
Yeah,
like, it was like in the Premier League. I think he had 5 Premier League goals against Mourinho. Mm. And the next highest was 2.
Yeah.
But he always scored. He scored against Arsenal as well, didn't he?
United at Old Trafford,
he was a player who scored in against the big teams, and also I would say, certainly the last 5-10 years, probably the best finisher we've had at the club. You know,
he was a clinical finisher. Yeah, if you remember as well, he was also a good guy off the pitch. He had that thing every Christmas whereby he would go to the homeless centre in Liverpool and serve Christmas dinners on Christmas Day to the homeless. You know, it's just proper and selflessness.
He still supports the Whitechapel.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Without trying to sound too cynical about the modern game, he did it because it was his choice rather than being saying this is, you know, this is good PR or whatever. Like, you know, it's a good reflection on his character. I have a semi-second thing. Yeah, he's the best finisher I've seen in the last 5 or 10 years. And an all-round good guy, and I totally agree, he'd be the best.
But that was Bezos' choice. So you've basically tried to jump on the line of his selection.
Not for the first time on the pod. I'm rambling incoherently with a view of trying to remember it. And I can't think of anybody brought in on a free who's been...
We've got some in the current squad.
I was going to say, all right, then, Gavin, let me help you out a little bit. Let me ask you, could Bernard be in that bracket?
Well, what I was going to say what I was going to say, and this goes back to Bees's point, because of the Bosman ruling, a free is not necessarily a free, is it? As such as that, as we've seen, there's at least one player on the club. What that means is, because you've got them on a free, you haven't paid a transfer fee, but you max out on the wages. So what you would have paid on a transfer fee, you then pay in wages to the player. So it's not necessarily like years ago you're on a free and you're just on the same wage as everybody else. You know,
Samuel Eto'o was a free transfer. Well, that cost the club a fair bit of money.
Yeah, so. Tom Cleverley. I mean, he was not the same level as Eto'o in wages, but again, he was free and
everyone sold at a good profit.
Absolutely,
There's I'm lost for words. That doesn't happen very often. But no, I think for me, I know we're saying before about nominal fee and stuff. I think Nigel Martin was just,
totally.
I think it was 400.
It was 400 grand. I wrote that in my sad stats book, so I dug it out recently, and it staggered
me. And you accuse me of being sad.
Right, I need books to actually remind me of these things.
Yeah.
But no, go on, Max Lyrical about Nigel.
I just thought he was. But my first reflections on him is A, if he'd have got him 10 years before, when
we should know the
story, which I'm sure he'll relay better than me. And B, even at 40, he's still probably the best Premier League goalkeeper we've had since Southall. And I'd say he's better than Nev in Nev's last two or three years. You give that surety to the defence and calmness and just seeing it all before type thing, and I think it was his ankle when in the end, was it? I think
he's confused.
He was probably good for another good two or three years when he was 2005-06. He was still performing really well, and Tim Howard, I'm afraid, was not as good as Nigel at his peak, or nowhere near.
He had presence, he had athleticism, but he had also this calm demeanour. You know, he spread assurance amongst the back four.
And there's no coincidence that, with an absolute, dare I say, bang average team in 2004-05, we got fourth, and I think Nigel was a key part of that, And he produced one of the great Premier League performances of Everton player, certainly probably by a goalkeeper, which is Anfield in January 2004, and a goalless draw, and Nigel spent most of 90 minutes trying to stop Steven Gerrard from scoring, didn't he?
In our old office, we're in Old Hall Street now, we're in St Paul's Square, but just across the road. But in our old office, there was always this huge big image on the wall from that game. And I couldn't work out whether it was Hippia or one of the other, sort of blonde haired football players. This header from literally about 4 yards. And Martin tipping it, spectacularly over the crossbar. It was one of the great goalkeeping performances at Anfield, only on a par with Georgie Woods in 1978-79. And how Everton, that's the greatest larceny I've ever seen in a football match. Everton were battered from start to finish, and George Wood was a one-man barrier between the greatest Liverpool team has ever been, that 78-79 team, and Everton. And then, as he often did, 8 minutes from the end, Andy King stole an equaliser. Dalglish was the only man that could get past George Wood.
It was
incredible. Yeah. But no, that anecdote you're talking about, Everton should have had Nigel Martin 10 years before they did. And it was weird because Joe Royal, the manager, he tried to bring in Paul Gerrard as a long-term replacement for Neville Southall, and it never really worked. I mean, Paul Gerrard had injuries, he had bad knee issues. I don't think he was quite as good as Joe thought he was going to turn out to be. He accepted this and so tried to bring in another long-term successor. And there were a couple of players he had earmarked, one of which was Nigel Martin, who was on the move at the time from Crystal Palace, I think it was. And he was at his peak. And so Everton arranged for him to meet at Park Food, which was where Peter Johnson, the chairman, and Cliff Fincher's right-hand man, had their offices to discuss terms. And he came with his agent, and he was very, very open to the idea of signing for Everton. Sat down in the entrance office, kept waiting for a ridiculously long time. And then, so eventually Cliff Finch came out, and they were a little bit irritated, so as you'd imagine, being kept waiting for an hour or so. And said, really sorry, so I kept you waiting, but, we can see you now. All right, well, we haven't got that long because Leeds United also want to talk to us, doing a bit of brinksmanship. And so rather than just say, oh, we're awfully sorry, let's bring you in and talk terms, Cliff, for whatever reason, known to himself, said, oh, well, if you need to go to Leeds, you know, so you better get on your way then, hadn't you? You know, so there's I can give you directions. And Nigel Martin, last year, he was given directions on how to get to Leeds by, you know, so the Everton director who was trying to sign him. So they allowed them to leave the premises. He then went to Leeds and they knew as soon as the, you know, so as soon as Leeds got, you know, Howard Wilkinson got his eyes on him, they weren't letting him leave until he got his signature on a contract. Anyway, he did. Everton missed out on him. So, you know, Joe was fuming when he heard this. And then targeted Mark Schwarzer. He was a Bradford goalkeeper who'd done very, very well in the cup competitions that year against Middlesbrough, I think. And again, for whatever reason, you know, so Peter Johnson couldn't be convinced that he was, you know, so the right idea, and so wouldn't sanction the money. So Joe is sat at home one night watching the League Cup semi-final, I think it was, when Stockport goalkeeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Stockport were playing against Middlesbrough, and he had this absolutely inspired performance to which, you know, so Joe's related the tale to me. Peter Johnson rang him, and I can't do his voice, I won't even try, but he says, Joe, this goalkeeper's really rather good, isn't he? Why didn't we sign him? And Joe said, yes, I could have sworn down the line to him. So two, I mean, Mark Schwarzer eventually became a very, very reliable, you know, sort of long-term Premier League goalkeeper. So two great goalkeepers that we could have missed out on. Fortunately, the club's transfer strategy is now completely different. So missed out on two good goalkeepers.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We've spoke about this, I think, on the pod before, but Lossell is a free, but he's also coming from a relegated club. Have we got any issue with that?
No. Some of our better signings have been from relegated clubs, haven't they? Or
you look across the park, the other show have made a habit of doing that over the last few years. Andy Robertson was signed from a relegated club and was excellent. Shaqiri was signed from a relegated club and he was excellent.
Wijnaldum.
Jorginho Wijnaldum was the third one. Thanks, Chris. I was struggling from the other one there. Yeah, it was excellent. So yeah, it doesn't matter at all. You know,
some of our best of buys. I mean, Jags was relegated, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Sheffield United. Yeah.
Les Scott had been at Wolves when he'd been relegated, but I think he
Idrissa. Play,
yeah. Yeah.
Of course, Idrissa Gueye.
I mean, Leighton was signed from Wigan, and they played Sheffield United on the last day to stay up, hadn't he? You know, so
Zouma on loan had gone down last season with Stoke. I know,
yeah, slightly different, but yeah, I know the same principle, isn't it? Really, not got a problem. Sometimes when you're looking for value, they're the best, aren't they? Really, because the club's got to sell.
Pickford, did you go down?
Yes, yeah. Under David Moyes, wasn't it?
I think with goalkeepers, it's an interesting one. There's two factors. A, has his confidence been absolutely shattered by playing behind a defence that is, like, you know, so leaky? Or B, is he so busy that he's had the opportunity to show, you know,
sort of his skills.
Exactly how good he is. You know, in Pickford's case, you know, so clearly it was. You know, so Lossell, who knows? You know, so I have to wait and see.
No. Going back to my point, though, is that's sometimes where the best value is in the transfer market, isn't it? The clubs are going down, got to sell because they can't afford the wages or whatever and need to raise money. So they've got to sell the best assets, but they're not going to get best value for them because they need to sell. And there's you know, as a buying club, it's a good opportunity, isn't it, to snaffle players up who maybe, if the club was still in the Premier League, be paying a bigger premium for. So absolutely not got a problem.
I think it's an interesting one, given his age. For a goalkeeper, he's probably at the peak of his powers. He's not a young lad, and he's not a grizzled veteran who's, you know, very much in his autumn years. This is someone who you'd think would be wanting to play, but, you know, he's coming into a team there where Jordan Pickford is very much the established number one, England's number one, and you'd have to hope that he doesn't get much game time, because if he is getting game time, either there's been a horrendous injury to Jordan Pickford or a loss of form. So, I just think it's an interesting one from his point of view, because I don't know how many minutes he'll get on under his belt, but I think he's a good one to certainly have in there as your number two.
And that's the assumption, isn't it? And I think that is the sort of feeling as it stands that he would be number two. So, what about Martin Stekelenburg, Gav? Does he increasingly feel like the odd one out? Does he accept being number three and a mentor to these younger goalkeepers, and they send Virginia on loan? What do you think? What's your hunch on Stekelenburg?
I'm more worried about Jao Virginia, to be honest with you. Stekelenburg has filled 12 months. So see out his contract, perhaps. I mean, I'm not sure whether he can move elsewhere, but he's not going to be, you know, I wouldn't put him third. I'd put Virginia third, to be honest with you. Put him fourth. But it's that twilight world of the backup keeper, again, isn't it, really? Mm. It's like a career within.
Yeah.
A career, isn't it? Really, you know, it's very sort of, you know, there's a bit of darkness to it, really, isn't it? Like a bit of vagueness about what they do.
I think in the Premier League stats, Pickford had played every game, every minute, 3,420 minutes of Premier League football. Steckenberg has sat on the bench for 3,420 minutes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, who was the fella we had in Howard's? It was the German fella we had.
Vessels.
Yeah, it was.
He played four or five games. He played against Oldham in the FA Cup, and he was hopeless.
Man United, and
Marcus Hanneman's the one who actually played no football whatsoever that we had a club for a year or so.
That's right. Yeah,
Carlo Nash only ever played one game in a Europa League dead rubber. But yeah, there's a couple of goalkeepers that have been there. The one I always felt sorriest for was Jason Keaton. He was the Australian keeper who was like back up to Neville Southam when Neville was his absolute peak. And I think about five seasons he was there and just never got a game until Neville, I think, finally got sent off, didn't he? And he got a game at Aston Villa. But it's a lonely existence being a backup goalkeeper. You have got to have a very peculiar mindset to make a success of that.
How will we look back if it does transpire that he leaves or again maybe doesn't or stays and doesn't play for the club again? How do we look back at Stecklenburg's time with Everton?
Steady. You remember the two penalty saves at Man City? That'll be the high point. He didn't actually make you sit back and go, wow, so what a performance. He was just steady. He was reliable. And that's good for a goalkeeper. So you want a goalkeeper that, spreads a bit of assurance. I can't think of any high-profile clangers that he dropped. I can think of that one inspired performance at Man City that helped, so the club get a point that day. Steady. That's not damning him with faint praise. That's decent. Mm.
But he was another one who was brought in seemingly as number two, wasn't it? When he first came in, the idea seemed to be that they were going to bring in somebody else as number one, but that number one never turned up. He became, so he ended up,
50% of the time he was number one and 50% of the time Joel.
For somebody who was only ever, he's been at the peak of the game, played in the World Cup final. Of course, we can't discount that, big times at Ajax and Roma. This was a high profile player in his time and his younger days, but for somebody who was never envisaged to be number one, he's had a solid Everton career.
I think maybe he's in some supporters' eyes he's sort of tarnished as he was Koeman's first signer, wasn't he? He was the one that came in on July the 1st for a nominal fee. He's somebody Koeman had at Southampton and at Ajax, and almost, I was a guilty by association, but do you know what I mean? In terms of
being the same nationality and etc. Maybe, but I'm not sure that matters now. I mean, I think I would imagine the chance to we need to reduce the wage bill.
Probably on a healthy
ones, first signing, as you say, the time when we had a bit of money to throw around the Mercedes first summer. I would imagine they'll try and get him off the wage bill, to be honest with you, Phil.
Because I don't think you were in the pod the other day when we discussed the potential of signing Lossell. Preno was underwhelmed. Gav felt it was sort of solid business. Where do you sit on that argument?
It's a good piece of business, like I said, given his age. I just wonder what he's thinking himself. I think from Everton's point of view, to get somebody who's been playing in the Premier League, who's at a good age for a goalkeeper, in that he's not too young, he's got that experience, but he's not in his autumn years yet. He should be at the peak of his powers. That's good for Everton, but just I'm not too sure what he gets out of it, unless he believes in himself, which you've got to do, and he somehow thinks that he can play quite a few minutes for Everton. You never know what might happen. You don't want it to happen, but if Pickford picks up an injury at any point, maybe you get a run in the team.
And of course, in his two seasons, we're reliably informed before we came in his two seasons in the Premier League, he registered 2 assists against Manchester United.
Wow. Okay. Well, from actual clearances down the pitch.
Yeah. Obviously, the one fairly recently, and I think it was one where they beat them 3-1 last season, I think.
Go on, Gav will tell me otherwise. I can't think of any other Everton goalkeeper. I can remember the one that scored, but assists.
I can't remember the director's Jordan had a direct assist.
I'll have one in my book.
I'll have this book.
I do collect assists in there because I'm a bit sad.
You give me stick. I mean, started the pod giving me stick, and since then he's shown that he's whatever nerd thing I've got, Preno's, especially with Everton, is just like way up there. And Gav, rightly
Gav,
so.
Knowledge is power. Yeah, exactly. Data.
Data, yeah, yeah.
Speaking of data and knowledge, Gav, you were reminded of a quirk of fate with before we came in.
Exactly. Phil Kinsella, who I've known a long time, Razor Mayside, pointed out on Twitter to us, Phil, that the last time Huddersfield got relegated before this season was in 1972, and they sold us a goalkeeper then.
Oh, don't.
who was David Lawson, signed for I think it was a record fee for a keeper of £80,000. And the one thing I would know, and Preno would agree with me, is that he was not an £80,000 goalkeeper. And hopefully Lossell will prove himself, you know, to be far better. And I'm sure he will be.
Gav reminded me that he was apparently very impressive in his first season at Goodison. Yeah. My first season watching Everton was 74-75, and he was so impressive, Dyke Davis managed to keep him out for half of that season.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he cost us the League Cup final in 77. He was responsible for the goals in the 77 semi-final.
Yeah.
How far off he was? Let's not go there. He wasn't impressive.
In the two key games in 77... April 77, the League Cup final at Trafford and the FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool, we conceded 5 goals, and there's an argument to say that Lawson was responsible for all 5 goals.
Oh God!
Which just shows you how bad he was after what was a good start in 72-3, and it was just nowhere near the required quality. And that's funny, isn't it? Because you say. I was saying that's when you had two keepers who were like, most clubs had two keepers who were like equal. You know, a lot of them had who were equal and you could swap and change and like, you know.
But then that comes back to the discussion about signing relegated players. He's one, you reliably tell me, that wasn't good enough and he went down with the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it was highly sought after, but yeah, it never worked. And I just remember those two games. And we bought Georgie Wood then, I think, Preno did me in 77, who... as I said on Twitter on Sunday, was the last week or whatever it was the last player before Jordan Pickford to play every league game in his first two seasons at the
Oh, is that right? Club. Georgie Wood was a weird one because he was occasionally brilliant, absolutely brilliant, but then had a propensity to make the odd howler. But, you know, largely fondly remembered because he was, you know, he had a great rapport with the crowd, you know, so he used to like, you know, play act and, you know, basically talk to the crowd during games. Not great for concentration, I would have thought, but the crowd loved it. And he did produce some absolutely inspired performances. But then he had that little wobble, didn't he, when he was called up by Scotland and got his first Scotland caps. In fact, Ali McLeod came to watch him the same day that Ron Greenwood came to watch Bob Latchford in a game against Newcastle United. Latchford scored twice and ended up getting his first England call-up. Georgie Wood conceded 4 in a 4-4 draw and had to wait quite a while longer to get his call-up. And eventually he did get his call-up. I think it was against Argentina and was never particularly reliable. He couldn't handle a big occasion, I don't know. He got to move to Arsenal, you know, so after that, you know, something was decent for Arsenal for a year or so.
Palace as well, didn't he? Yeah.
But he was not quite top level, you know, so absolute top tier. And that was always Bob Latchford's argument. He says that if Everton had bought Peter Shilton, who they were very, very strongly linked with, you know, in the mid-70s, Brian Clough did make that, you know, sort of bold leap, paid him an awful lot of money, but got the rewards for it. Nottingham Forest became European champions and he was a large part of that, Peter Shilton. And Latchford always argued that if Everton had bought Peter Shilton, they'd have won the league in 75. In 77, those howlers that cost us the League Cup and the FA Cup semi-final probably wouldn't have happened. Who knows? History could have been rewritten.
It's two things about George Wood is, first thing is, it was Maradona's first goal, wasn't he? The international goal was against George Wood.
I didn't know that.
Because he said about Argentina.
It was a 3-1 game.
The second thing was, he was playing in the reserve game, you know, because he got dropped, didn't he? I think Martin Odds came in, didn't he?
Right.
He's playing in the reserve game at Goodison. And a thing came over to the tannoy. You don't get now, do you? Yeah. Will somebody registration, car, blah, blah, blah. He's moving. It was George Woods. Had to stop the game to move
his
car.
Oh, my word. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Come back, you know, yeah.
I think it'll break the internet now.
And reserve games are there, as Penn will tell you, because they're less regulated in those days. Yeah. Where I had far more quirky, unusual stories than...
Well, Tanner announces a good as Richard. Yeah. I mean, if you remember, Billy Butler used to do it with the Radio Merseyside DJ in the 70s, and he would get sacked now for some of the things he used to do. good stunt to use the pull. Olchinkum played there in an FA Cup tie, if you remember, in 74. And he put a tanning announcement out telling Olchinkum that once the match is finished, your team bike will be parked outside the dressing room. When kids used to invade on the pitch, he would say, come on, kids, get off the pitch. I'll set Tommy Smith on you if you don't move. And, you know, just all kinds of, like, mad little quirks. And he'd have got into trouble nowadays.
I remember we played Mad City in the Cup quarter-final in 81, and Billy was the PA, and he said, should there be a result today, then Everton will be playing in the semi-final at Villa Park. You know, like, all the City fans were going mad, like, you know. But,
things are similar happened to us when we played Chelsea in the League Cup semi-final under Moyes, what was that, 2007, 2008. And the pitch, on-pitch announcer at Chelsea said, hello, Everton fans, welcome to a semi-final.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah. You've been a bit naughty like that over the years, haven't you? Yeah.
Well, we have got very politically correct nowadays. Yeah, you can get away with that in the 70s and 80s, but maybe not
there
now.
There was an Ipswich one, I think, where they had to put a... Gordon Lee had forgotten his chewy. And the coach server had the keys to the coach, but he wasn't like sitting in the dugout, so they had to put announcements on the tannoy at Ipswich. Will the coach ever go back to the Everton coach and get the chewies for Gordon Lee? You know what I mean?
Because obviously a manager can't get through a football match without chewing gum.
And that's all disappeared to a degree. It's so sanitised now, not like naivety and like, but a little bit more humour has sadly gone. But yeah, reserve games are... I've done loads of stuff over the years about reserve games that have gone wrong completely. It's far more entertaining than the first team matches. But yeah, George was a decent keeper, wasn't he, for a couple of years?
He was, yeah.
But that just shows, I mean, Martin Hodge was his deputy.
Yeah.
And Martin Hodge then had a long career, didn't he? Sheffield Wednesday in the 80s, you know. Talked of as being an England keeper.
Did you know he finished third in the 1980 Save of the Season competition? And it was right in front of me. It was one of those moments. It was the FA Cup semi-final against West Ham when Billy Bonds connected with a header from about 6 yards, and it's one where your heart sinks and you just think, oh, it's a goal. And then this just athletic save from out of nowhere, and I was so disappointed it was only voted third. I thought it should have been the winner. I can't remember which save beat it, but it was a great save.
Isn't it in your book, Dave, what finished first?
It isn't. Another little aside, I won a five-a-side tournament playing in Southport once.
That's the whole point of this conversation, and we just won the competition and thought that's the end of it.
Left, and we were told subsequently Martin Hodge had turned up half an hour later to present the winning team with medals, and we'd gone home. So I missed my opportunity to get a medal from Martin Hodge.
One for the teenagers this week.
Well, absolutely. I feel we've lost our way somewhat, but meandering through... Everton's history with goalkeepers.
You started the film.
On topic. But no, entertaining nevertheless. Yeah. The final part of today's podcast, as promised, João Pedro Sousa, Marco Silva's number two, his right-hand man, his trusted assistant at every club Marco has been manager, remains in talks with Famalicão. I've probably pronounced that incorrectly. Portuguese club who are coming up into the top tier of Portuguese football next season, and he is in line to be their new manager. But do you feel like maybe enough hasn't been made of the fact that Marco could be losing such an integral part of his backroom staff?
Perhaps, given, like you say, he's always been with him. That's the thing with Marco. He does have that tried and trusted staff. But, it's a significant moment, but it needn't be all doom and gloom for Everton. Remember, obviously, David Moyes had Alan Irving there as his number two, and then brought in Steve Round, and that ended up seemingly from the outside being rather a seamless transition. It didn't affect the results on the pitch. But yeah, if he's been with him from the start, I think more for Marco himself, it's a big thing.
Do I know any thoughts about Marco losing somebody who clearly is, you know, a confidant, if you like, and a long time trusted ally?
Yeah, it's a concern, certainly. An awful lot tends not to be made about assistant managers and number twos, but they can be so important. You know, a big part of Everton's history is when Colin, you know, was basically reunited with Howard and elevated from the youth team to work alongside him with the first team. You know, Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, never the same apart. You know, so some managerial teams are double acts effectively across the park. I mean, the counter to that is Jurgen Klopp lost his long-term trusted, you know, so right-hand man in Buvac. And seamless, like, absolutely didn't make any difference whatsoever to them, because the backup team that they built there, you know, was so was so big, was so impressive. Now, equally, Everton have got a big backup team there. You know, so Duncan Ferguson is part of the setup. There are other Portuguese assistants that have come with Marco. We don't know quite, you know, so what input and influence they have. But if this guy has worked with Marco throughout his entire managerial career, which he has, it's clearly a blow, you know, to be losing a man like that. And it will clearly be very, very interesting to see whether he does elevate somebody from within to fill that role or brings in somebody completely, you know, so from outside. But we won't know basically until we can speak to Marco, until we see how things operate, you know, sort of next season. But yeah, it's a little bit of a concern. You know, so I don't want to attach too much significance to it, but you know, it's a little bit of a worry.
Understanding is, Gav, that Silva has not been surprised. You know, it's something that's perhaps, you know, João Pedro Sousa has made him aware of for a while, that he had intentions and ambitions to be a manager in his own right. But you know, even from the very the most basic facet of this story, in that people will see who go to Goodison and go to the away games. Often, João Sousa is up off the touchline in Marco's ear. Often, you know, when there's set pieces, he's the one that's shouting across and trying to organise it. You know, and that's, you know, it's not a given that the right man will be the replacement will be the right fit and be able to replace what he offered.
Absolutely, I agree with what's been said previously. Yeah, it's gone under the radar and be a share Prano's concerns. I think it is quite it's an issue that will need resolve, and I think what I would say as well, compared to saying like Moyes losing Evan and stuff, is it's his first year at Evan, isn't it? So he's still getting to know the club, and he's still like not working in his own country, isn't he? So having people who are familiar to you is a big plus there, isn't it? That continuity, I think, in terms of bedding in. So I do think it's a concern. I'd never heard of that team, by the way, until it did. You mentioned it last week. At the same time, sometimes partnerships can be a little bit stale, can't they? And sometimes you do need like somebody to give fresh input. I'm not saying that it's the case with Marco, probably isn't, but almost certainly isn't. But managers sometimes surround them with like yes men. He'll just like agree to everything that the wants and stuff, and that's why sometimes you have these long partnerships. Sometimes there's an opportunity of somebody else coming and can bring in fresh ideas. So on the one hand, I'm worried, but at the same time, the plus side is somebody could come in and look at things slightly different, have a different relationship with the players, and that could be for everybody's benefit. But my first thought of it when you broke the news last week was, that's not great piece of news. This and I would say underestimate the value of a top class number two.
Interesting. Well, we'll keep on top of that story. It is expected that João Sousa will leave football club to go back to Portugal, but that's not confirmed yet. But we will bring you that news as and when it happens. Chaps, thank you very much for your company. Really enjoyed that. A meander through various topics and various periods in Everton's history, right up to the modern day, with the confirmation that Jonas Lossell has signed a pre-contract agreement and will join on July the 1st. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, you can rate, review and subscribe to us on iTunes and the Acast app, so please do so. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.